Our next panel is composed of the following: Mr. Ernie Penn, the Hoh Tribal Council member from Forks, Washington, accompanied by the Honorable Walter Ward, the chairman of the Hoh Indian Tribe, the Honorable Tom Wooten, the chairman, Samish Indian Nation, Anacortes, Washington. Anacortes. Thank you. Mr. Terrence L. Bracey, the chair of the Board of Trustees, the Morris K. Udall Foundation, Tucson, Arizona. Ms. Ellen K. Wheeler, Executive Director of the Morris K. Udall Foundation, Tucson, Arizona. And Ms. Clara Pratt, the former Native American Congressional Udall intern, Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome you to the panel. We do have all of your prepared testimonies. They will be made a part of the record as if actually read. And each panel member proceeding in the order in which I introduced you may proceed for 5 minutes as you wish. Mr. Penn.
Chairman Rahal, Ranking Member Hastings, other members of the committee, I'm Ernie Penn.
Can you pull the microphone closer to you, please?
Council member with the Hoh Tribe. With me today is Chairman Walter Ward and Council Member Don Gomez. I'd like to thank Congressman Norm Dix for introducing H.R. 1061. We really appreciate what he's done for us. Today's hearing is a very important step toward realizing our dream, a safer place to live for our children and elders. The Hoh people have always lived near the mouth of the Hoh River on the Pacific Ocean. This is a picture where the original village was located. All but a few houses have been destroyed by tsunamis. In 1893, the Hoh Reservation was established by executive order. It was 640 acres of land, 1 square mile, but due to tsunamis and flooding and erosion, we've lost over 160 acres. Here's an aerial picture of the reservation and the river. As you can see, the river is very close to our housing. Chairman Ward's grandson thinks we'll be fishing out of our back door in the next couple of years. Don's house is right there. The river changes after every rain. It rains a lot here. It's the rainiest place in North America. In 2006, we filled 6,000 sandbags to protect our homes and buildings. Filling sandbags is an annual event, and we can teach a class on sandbagging. We're experts there. We have asked federal agencies for help, but these agencies are limited in what they can do because 90% of the reservation is in a floodplain. And 100% is in a tsunami zone. H.R. 1061 would help us move out of the danger zone and let us have access to more federal assistance. Here's a map in the legislation. That is referenced in a legislation. Here's the current reservation. Here's the Fletcher Tree Farm that the tribe has that purchased. Here's the land that is transferred by the state. It is 160 acres. I'd like to note that this land is the same amount of land that the tribe has lost over the years through erosion and flooding. Here's the land purchased from Rainier Timber. Here's the right-of-way we purchased from Union Pacific Railroad. The final piece is land from National Park Service that would be transferred to us. We need this piece because it would connect the current reservation to the rest of the parcels. This land of the National Park Service has been logged, and the only road to the reservation crosses this parcel. We have worked very closely with the National Park on this legislation. The use of the land would not change under the bill. There will be no development. The tribe would become the caretakers of this land. One final note, the bill prohibits gaming on these lands under the legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. This legislation will provide us with a safe homeland for our future.
Thank you. Chairman Wooten.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'd like to thank Doc Hastings and Jay Ansley for being here today for our hearing. My name's Tom Wooten. I'm the chairman of the Samish Indian Nation of Western Washington. I'd like to thank Chairman Ray Hall for holding this hearing on House Resolution 2040, a bill that would allow the tribe to take land into trust and enable us to provide critical services for our tribal members. I'd also like to thank Congressman Rick Larson for introducing this legislation and for his leadership on tribal issues. Mr. Chairman, the Samish Indian Nation has had a very long and unique and troubled relationship with the United States government. You've heard some of that today. Let me give you a brief history. We were a signatory to the Point Elliott Treaty in 1855, as well as several other tribes in the Northwest Washington. We brought some pictures along and maps showing you where we're located. If you look at the maps, you can see that the tribe is located in the city of Anacortes and within the San Juan Islands. The outlined yellow area is the area that would be impacted by this legislation. We've also brought a picture that was taken in the early 1900s of our ancestors traveling in a canoe off one of the islands, Samish Island. Our ancestors used canoes to navigate the waterways. Since the Treaty of 1855, our tribe has had a continuous relationship with the federal government. And although the Samish tribe was never terminated by Congress, our tribe faced a period of time from 1969 to 1996, during which time the BIA did not consider the tribe to be federally recognized. In 1969, the BIA retyped a list of federally recognized tribes. Unbeknownst to us, during this retyping of the list, our tribe was mistakenly removed from this list. This clerical error became the basis for an incredible, painful journey for our tribe that we've had to endure. In 1972, our tribe had to submit a petition to the Bureau to regain our rightful status. We were told this was the only avenue available to us. Unfortunately, the BIA continued to delay on this matter and at over 15 years and ruled against us without ever holding a hearing. Ultimately, it took us 25 years, an entire generation, and the intervention of the federal court to finally regain our status as a federally recognized tribe. Not only did the court rule that the tribe existed all those years, but it also held the Bureau in contempt for how it treated the tribe. For the past 13 years, our tribe has struggled to rebuild our homeland. To this day, we continue to suffer the unequal treatment that we've suffered from the federal government. One of the most frustrating issues has been the inability of our tribe to get the Bureau to take land into trust on our behalf, and this is why we're here today. Because of what happened to our tribe in the past 40 years, we do not have a defined reservation boundary, and under current federal regulations, do not have the ability to take land into trust like other tribes. The problem we face today is that all of our fee to trust applications are treated as off-reservation. What that means is that our fee to trust applications must go through a more cumbersome process. As you know, off-reservation trust applications are often met with hostility and disfavor by the Bureau. This has stymied the tribe's ability to get land into trust. One example of the difficulty is the fact that all off-reservation fee-to-trust applications must be approved by the central office here in Washington, D.C., and the regional office approves on-reservation applications. This consuming requirement can add years to the fee-to-trust process. We have approached the Bureau on this matter, and they have determined that they do not have the administrative authority to establish a boundary for on-reservation applications. They have told us this can only be done by Congress, and that's why we're here today. Mr. Chairman, House Resolution 2040 is a straightforward bill. The legislation would designate a small geographic area in our ancestral lands that would require the Bureau to process the tribe's fee-to-trust applications as an on-reservation application. This would grant the tribe the same process that most other tribes in the country utilize. Mr. Chairman, I also want to stress the fact that this bill has nothing to do with gaming. In fact, the bill explicitly states that no lands taken into trust under this measure can be used for gaming. You should know that this legislation is also supported by the Mayor of Anacortes and the Skagit County Commissioners. Both the city and county have sent letters of support for this legislation, and I'd like to submit them for the record. Mr. Chairman, I think we can agree that one of the key anchors of tribal sovereignty is the ability of the Indian tribe to have land to exercise their authority. For far too long, our tribe has been denied the most basic rights. On behalf of the Samish tribe, I ask that the committee to pass this legislation so we can move forward to assert our sovereignty and provide for our people. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing, and I am available for questions.
Thank you. Mr. Bracey, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thanks to you, Congressman Grijalva, and to both the minority and the majority of this committee, because everybody has worked with our foundation and the goals that Congress set out in 1992. That we were set up as an educational foundation, the fourth federal educational foundation, and we're proud of our programs. Over 1,500 Udall alumni are all over the country, 45 from Washington State. I could go down the list. The one thing that happened, though, because of the crease of change of leadership and whatnot, we never received our full allotment that was promised us as the other foundations. And so we've asked you as part of this legislation to take the ceiling off of our $40 million limit and allow Congress to make its own decisions year by year. It's really gotten expensive to go to college, and our grants now are only 20% of tuition. The Udall Scholarship is probably one of the most popular scholarships on U.S. campuses. But we're not just an educational foundation anymore. Congress, in 1998, sent us the job of setting up the first environmental mediation agency for the federal government. We took this willingly and happily, and it's really become quite an important institution. We have about 300 private mediators working with us in 46 states, and our people are involved in mediating disputes and trainings. Everything from the Everglades, we manage the Missouri River. We're involved in Hawaiian coral reefs. It's all over the country. We need modestly more resources. We need some more people. We need a few SES employees, and this bill would make that possible. Finally, 2 years after that, Congress asked us to set up a graduate school for tribal leaders. We worked with the Harvard Project and with the University of Arizona and put together something that's called the Native Nations Institute, which I think is widely regarded throughout Indian country and provides some of the best support. Since then, more than 2,700 tribal leaders have gone through our executive education courses. We've published many documents, and we've taken a leadership role in that. There's one final reason that we need this bill, and that is the board, bipartisan, has unanimously voted to bring Stuart Udall into the foundation with Mo. Stu will be 90 in January, and the board feels compelled to move now to try to see if we could possibly get this done. So thanks so much for your time. It's a very non-controversial program. I've been chair for 15 years, and we've never had anything but a unanimous vote, whether it was a Democratic administration or a Republican administration. And we just appreciate the support we've gotten from everybody, and we just ask for your indulgence on this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry. Great program. Great job you do. Ms. Wheeler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Ellen Wheeler, and I'm the executive director of the Morris K. Udall Foundation, and I really appreciate the opportunity to appear here today. I'm going to focus my very brief remarks on Section 9 of the bill, H.R. 1035, and why we at the Udall Foundation believe that this will help us better do the job that Congress has given us. A large part of our mission at the Foundation, as Terry just mentioned, is to help other agencies prevent, manage, and resolve environmental disputes. We do this through a program called the U.S. Institute for Environmental Conflict Resolution, which Congress created in 1998. We provide mediation, facilitation, training, and other related services to help agencies try to solve their problems and their disputes by negotiating and collaborating with the public rather than resorting to litigation. Most of the disputes that we're asked to get involved in are really quite large and complex, and often they involve many stakeholders, possibly hundreds of stakeholders. Section 9 of H.R. 1035 would address a barrier that we have frequently encountered in these large processes, which is that federal agencies are very concerned that they'll be accused of violating the Federal Advisory Committee Act, which is commonly known as FACA. Often any suggestion by us that they should engage the public, go out, reach out to the public, raises this fear of FACA on the part of agencies. We at the Udall Foundation wholeheartedly support the goals of FACA, which generally are to promote transparency and openness, and to make sure that if there is an advisory group formed by an agency, that it will be well-balanced and represent all interests. And we think that the chartering process and all the rules of FACA are entirely appropriate when an agency does set up an advisory committee and controls that committee. But in the conflict resolution processes that we get involved in, the U.S. Institute is completely independent of the federal agencies involved, and we manage the process, and we provide those same safeguards that FACA would provide. We make sure that everybody's represented. We make sure it's open and transparent. The Institute was charged by Congress to provide these services and to be independent and neutral, and to help broker solutions. And we have found that this fear of FACA and fear by agencies that they'll get sued if they talk to the public really is a barrier. We've also found that it's not a solution to simply charter a FACA committee whenever this fear arises. These processes can be very time-consuming to set up. Often it takes up to 2 years for an agency to set up a FACA committee. It requires high-level approvals, and it isn't practical to charter a committee every time there's a conflict that the Institute gets involved in. We've been asked to help on more than 80 cases last year alone and really did substantial work in more than 30. So we believe that Section 9 of H.R. 1035 would simply clarify for agencies that our dispute resolution services do not trigger the rules of FACA, and we believe that this would enable us to do a much better job of helping to resolve disputes as Congress has asked us to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Great job. Great work you do, too. Ms. Pratt?
Chairman Rahal, Ranking Member Hastings, and distinguished members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear today. My name is Clara Pratt, and I was privileged to be a Morris K. Udall Native American Congressional intern in 2003. I'm an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation, and I'm from a small community on the reservation called Lepton, Arizona. I'm currently serving as the National Director for the Office of Native American Affairs at the Small Business Administration. I'm pleased to present testimony today on the Morris K. Udall Scholarship and Excellence in National Environmental Policy Amendments Act of 2009. The work of the Morris K. Udall Foundation has and continues to make lasting impressions on my personal development and professional growth. Of the many programs that the Udall Foundation administers, I'd like to specifically keep my remarks to the Native American Congressional Internship Program. The Udall name is well known and respected throughout the country, but even more so in my home region of the Southwest. So when I applied and was subsequently accepted to the program, I was excited and thrilled. I never anticipated the long-term effects that the program would have on my career and my life. Upon placement in Congressman Grijalva's office, I began work on various issues directly affecting Arizona constituents of Americans. It was then that I realized the far-reaching effects that policies determined here had on Indian country and that I wanted to be a part of it. The internship ignited in me a passion for public service. Federal policies and regulations have a disproportionate effect on Native Americans due to the unique relationship that the federal government has with Native tribes and tribal entities. However, the representation of Native Americans in high-level decision-making positions in government remains small. These realizations further drove my commitment to public service and shaped my perspective. Following my experience in the Udall Native Internship Program, I've had the opportunity to be a civil servant at the Department of Commerce, to work for my tribe, the Navajo Nation, and now to serve in this capacity of directing the Office of Native American Affairs at the Small Business Administration. I can, without hesitation, say that I would not be in this position had it not been for the Udall Foundation. I undoubtedly would have become a public servant, but I would not have had such access so early on in my career to high-level policy and decision makers. The work of the foundation to train and to provide levels of access to young leaders is an important and unique aspect of the internship program. The network opportunities are tremendous, and the internship program has grown to include not only congressional placements, but federal placements as well, to give participants a wider range of access to the federal arena. As I see each new group of interns come in every summer, I'm really excited about their leadership potential and the repercussions that that's going to subsequently have on Indian country. The program is unique and affords possibilities that would otherwise not be available. Since the program's inception in 1996, the goal has been to provide individuals access to the inner workings of federal government in the hopes that they would then relay that knowledge and experience into work that would benefit their tribal communities. Although only 13 years old, we have seen leaders already emerge from this program. Many alum have gone on to work in federal, state, and tribal governments, serving their people in those capacities and working to find real solutions and challenges that face Indian country. These former interns are fulfilling the hopes of the program and doing exactly what was a lifelong mission for Mo Udall, to bring talent, integrity, and passion to public service. The Udall Foundation continues to make very real impacts on Native communities, whether we're talking about the internship program, the scholarships that are available, or the Native Nations Institute for Leadership, Management, and Policy. The effects are significant. The legacy of the Udall name is indeed a legacy that began long before Mo Udall's service. Members of the Udall family have been model public servants. Mo's brother Stuart served both in the U.S. House and later as the Secretary of Interior, where he advocated energy conservation policies that were ahead of the times. It started with the strong values instilled in Stuart and Mo by their family and continues now with the public service of Udall descendants. I'm amazed and humbled by the fact that I'm sitting before you here a mere 61 years after Native Americans, including my grandparents, were given the right to vote in Arizona. Justice Levi Udall, Mo and Stuart's father, advocated for that right, stating that to deny the right to vote is to do violence to the principles of freedom and equality. The Udalls have been champions for Native America, and the foundation in its many works continues that legacy. I can think of no better fitting tribute than to support the foundation's ongoing work and to champion the inclusion of Stuart Udall's name in the title of the foundation. Both Stuart and Mo's commitment to the conservation of the environment, the advancement of public service, and the unwavering commitment to Native America is exemplary and continues through the policies that were enacted under their watch. Both Stuart and Mo embodied admirable public service, and we can all only hope to continue on in that commendable tradition. I thank Chairman Grijalva for introducing this piece of legislation. Thank you.